This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Mr. Shane Tolt. I don't know why I said Mr., but Shane Tolt. You can call me Shane. Call me whatever you want to, okay? But Shane is good. Just Shane. It's fine. I don't know. Sometimes people want to call me Shane Tolt. Like, I'm a two-name guy. I don't really know why. There's not that many Shanes. So I think I can just be Shane, if we can agree on that. Anyways, hey, welcome. Thanks again. This is my podcast. It's all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman for a professional rock and roll band. And today we have a great episode. I speak to Brian of Have Mercy, who are, they just put out their third record just a few weeks ago. It is terrific. Make sure you check it out after you listen to this. I'll be, of course, playing some stuff at the end. And really, it's a great talk. We talk about all kinds of stuff. Their band having some member changes, how he feels about that, how he isn't that stoked on the record before this one. So it's a great, great chat. I can't wait for you to hear the whole thing. As always, you can get in touch with me. It's very, very easy. We have all these different ways you can do it. The most standard way is to go with the email. You know, email's been around for a while now. I'd say I've probably had an email address for about 20 years. Pretty crazy stuff, isn't it? And yeah, that email address is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We have a Twitter. It is @leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. That's a great way to just, boom, hit me real fast. We have Instagram, which I post some stuff up from the show. And if you're so inclined, you can jump on Facebook too. We're on there as well. I want to give a big shout out to I Prevail, Brian, and Eric for doing the podcast the last 2 weeks. It was a lot of fun speaking with those guys. Super eye-opening, super interesting. If you haven't heard those episodes, go back and check them out. They're great. And of course, go see them on the entire Vans Warped Tour. My band Silverstein will be there as well. And that's coming up soon. We're like weeks away from the start of Warped Tour. It's going to be a very, very hot summer, but I'm super excited for the lineup. As a music fan, a lot of my favorite stuff growing up was punk rock. And there's a lot of great punk bands on Warped Tour this year, which is kind of like, you know, what I remember Warped Tour being, you know, in the late 90s when I first started going. So I'm very excited for that. And as I record this, I am in Santiago, Chile. We're having an awesome South American tour down here. We played in Peru last night in Lima. Wild. So apparently the venue had to get moved at the very, very last minute because somebody was, well, shot in the other one. So we moved the venue, and I guess it was a lot smaller, but they had to honor all the tickets they sold. So it was like packed in there, and it was one of top three hottest shows I've ever played. It was very, very difficult to sing and move around and perform, but if anyone there is listening to this from Peru and was at the show, it was a really, really fun time. I will never, ever forget that. And we got a few more shows here in South America too. If you're from down here, we're going to be in Brazil for two shows. We're going to be in Argentina, and tomorrow we play in Santiago, Chile, and very excited for that. It's one of my favorite cities in the entire world. Before we jump into it, one more thing I want to tell you about. It is the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. For some people, the super fans out there, one episode a week, it's just not enough. You need more. And more is what you can have. We have bonus episodes by the month. We have extra ones if you're in the higher tier even. Lots of cool stuff. I do a Q&A session every now and then. And we have a great Facebook group with a whole bunch of other Lead Singer Syndrome fans. It's a really, really great community. We have contests. We have get-togethers in various cities all over the world. And also, if you're interested in Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, the only way to get it is through the All Access Club. And it's as little as $6 a month to sign up. And yeah, it's really, really sick. So please check it out. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess and go on there and see if it's right for you. All right, let's jump in to this week's episode and my conversation with Brian of Have Mercy. I know that you know that I know you don't really care.
Oh, what's going on, Shane?
Hey, man. How's, dude, it's very nice to talk to you. How is Houston, Texas? That's where you are at the moment, correct?
Yes, sir. Houston's beautiful. I mean, it's hot, it's humid, but, you know, this venue that we're in is fucking sick, so I'm excited.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, Houston, probably my least favorite city in Texas.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were gonna say that.
I don't know, man. I don't know what it is. I feel like... Obviously, Austin, South by Southwest, sick. You ever been to Austin for South by Southwest?
I've never been for South by, no. Like, that seems like a shit show.
I know, I've never actually been either. But I'm just going to pretend that it's like a cool thing I've done. but then San Antonio, great shows, great scene there. And Dallas really stepped up their game in the last couple of years.
Hell yeah.
But Houston, I don't know, man. I think it's still, like, fourth place.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight. We'll see how it is. Dude, there's like, they decked out these green rooms in this place. There's like giant TVs everywhere, private bathrooms. Like, so far, so good.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Okay. Do they have a foosball table?
They don't have a foosball table now.
That's a deal breaker for me. That's on Silver Seas Rider. We need a foosball table every dressing room.
I believe that.
That's what we need. We're serious about foosball. So you're on tour with Real Friends. How is that tour going so far? I love Real Friends. They're killing it. How's it been?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I love watching Real Friends every night. They've really dedicated fans. Tiny Moving Parts is fucking great. Nothing Nowhere is a really good up-and-coming band. And Broadside's killer, too. So it's been incredible.
Yeah, it's really, really good, man. And I got to say, you have a new record that just came out about 3 weeks ago. And I am totally all about it. I think it's an awesome record. I have been listening to it nonstop. How are you feeling about the new record? I know the last record, your sophomore record, you weren't totally stoked on. So tell me about this new record and how is it going over live so far?
I mean, it's incredible. Like we played the majority of our set is new songs and kids know every single lyric. I mean, I definitely feel more confident playing these songs than anything off our last record. You're right. I wasn't feeling it at that time, and I still don't like that record as much, but it did resonate with some kids. So, you know, it's there. It's in the atmosphere for the rest of eternity.
Yeah. How is that? like there's one record Silverstein made that I don't like, and it was mostly the recording process, I think, that I didn't like as much as, like, I don't think the songs are as great either, but it's more that time in my life I look back at and go, oh, that was kind of a shitty time. Is it more that with it, or is you just think the songs aren't there, or do you just think that the recording quality isn't there, or what is it about your second record that you just kind of bums you out?
It was everything. I mean, the process felt very rushed. We didn't have the songs ready, but, you know, the label wanted a record. It's just everything altogether didn't feel right. And there's some songs that I love on that record, but those aren't the ones that ended up being the big hits off of it. So it's every aspect just didn't feel right. Didn't feel natural.
Well, it's funny you say that about records. I mean, I kind of do like your second record, to be honest. But I really like your new one, like, way more than anything else you've done. And I kind of listened to it through it. And I know there's a couple singles. Coexist is a big song. And what's the one near the end of the record? It's a great track.
I could say
good,
any of them.
Good Christian Man, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That's Christian a great Man. Track. And you kind of have these songs. I guess they're singles or whatever. But I feel like that record from start to finish is great. You know what I mean? All the songs are great, and they could all be singles. How do you go about choosing what songs are going to be the one? Is that a label decision? Is that something that you talk about? Like, do you run the songs off, kind of vibe it off other people? How do you make those decisions? Because that's always tough.
It's weird. I mean, it's definitely like, I don't know if you've done it, but I'll go and show my friends like our new record and see, gauge people and see what they like the most. I definitely knew when we wrote Coexist that was going to be the single. To me, like, that sounded fucking huge, and it sounded like Old Have Mercy, just a little reformed. Good Christian Man, I actually never liked that song.
Oh, really?
I like it now, but Hopeless was like, that's the first single, we gotta push it. And I was like, I don't know, let's make that the second. Like, I love every track on the record. I think we could have, you know, made a push in any direction and had fans excited. So.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah,
so talking about Hopeless Records, I know you were on Top Shelf, great indie label. You had a lot of success with them early on. The deal was up, and how did you get hooked up with Hopeless Records to begin with?
Yeah, we were playing a show in LA, and we were with band Seaway from Canada. And
I know them very well.
Great dudes. We were on tour with them, and Hopeless came out to see them. And I remember it was a Friday, and they checked us out and said, hey, let's talk Monday. Monday morning, the call came in, and like, that was it. We just decided we wanted to be on Hopeless, and it felt like a good fit at the time.
Hopeless came to see Seaway, didn't sign Seaway, and signed you guys instead.
Yeah.
Did Seaway try to kick your ass after that, or what?
Oh, hell no. I think they knew that they were... I think they knew they wanted to go Pure Noise Records, and like, I don't know, we were... This was like 4 years, well, 3 years ago. So like, we were still all on the up and up, and we still are. I think it's a process and journey for everyone to just be excited about and help each other out.
Absolutely. And at that time, you know, you guys have had a lot of member changes, and I know you're the last original member of the band.
Yeah.
A lot of the members have left fairly recently. Now, going back to that moment when you got signed to Hopeless and you have this, you know, big label, there's expectations, you know, it's like, okay, we're not on Top Shelf anymore. We're on Hopeless. And there's all these, you know, Taking Back Sundays on Hopeless and All Time Low is on Hopeless. And, you know, there's all these Silverstein is on Hopeless or were, you know, you have all these bands that have done really well. There becomes expectations. Now, how much of those expectations maybe not working out on that second record led to some of the members being like, you know what, I'm gonna leave Have Mercy?
Yeah, I think it was just at a point that we thought we were gonna be in a like huge position just signing to Hopeless. We're like, we're gonna be the next big thing. You know, it didn't end up being that way, and I think we had really high expectations and tried to live up to them instead of just letting things happen organically and naturally and have, you know, just like ride with what we were already doing. We kind of like forced things into this new record or the second LP, and it didn't work. I don't think it played too much into the guys leaving. We were all just unhappy. So, you know, it was an amicable split and everything ended up fine.
Yeah. And I guess what's the dynamic with the new guys? You have, obviously I'm sure some of them were big fans of your band. Now they're in your band. I always like to think about that stuff. You know, it's like, you know, when you have somebody in your band that used to listen to your band as a fan, they can bring in kind of a unique element of like maybe where you should take things, either with the music side or production or the vibe or whatever. How is that going with some of the new members?
Well, yeah, my writing partner, Nate, he was actually a fan of the band for a long time before I even met him. So like I met him in a Target one time and like we just started hanging out. And then I asked him to join the band. The other guys that are playing on the road with us right now are just from different bands that I've toured with in the past, and we all got along. So when everything went down, I was like, hey, do you guys want to come on the road? And it's very easy. And like, I've loved these dudes for years, so this is great.
That's cool. No, you know, you say that it didn't work out like on your second record with Hopeless. Like, you had these expectations that you were going to be the next big thing, and it didn't work out. I mean, you talk about it like it couldn't work out now. I mean, you guys have a great record. It just came out. You're on a great tour. What's stopping you guys from becoming that big band in the like whatever emo scene or post, I don't know what the hell music you guys play. I don't even know. I mean, maybe that's part of the problem is nobody knows how to describe your music.
Yeah, that's always tough.
But what, you know, you talk about it like, oh, it's kind of over and you guys are sort of just, this is where you're going to be. And this is the size band you're going to be. But are there like, do you ever think like, oh, this song could blow up and Coexist could be this big song and, you know, and we could be this big band. Is that, do you feel like that's not a dream you're chasing anymore or do you not care? Or are you just happy where you're at?
Oh, I'm not happy where I'm at. I'm never going to be happy where I'm at. Like, I definitely, like, this is a do-over for me. Like, this is what our second record should have been. I'm happy now. Like, I'm in a good spot. The band that we have is very supportive. Like, we're loving every minute on the road. And the fans can really kind of get that notion, too. Before I came out on the road, I didn't think that fans were going to react to this new album like they are. And yet they know every single goddamn lyric and are screaming it. And I announce, like, I tell them that we're touring in the fall and kids just lose it. Like, it's going to be, I definitely see it. It's up and up from here.
It rules, man. It rules. And yeah, so you guys are doing a headliner. Is that in the fall? Is that the plan?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you're probably the first to hear it. But yeah, we're going to do a headliner in the fall. We have a bunch of shit planned this year to make things really interesting for the fans. A lot of intimate shows and some cool things going down.
That's great. Yeah. So I guess you can't talk about yet what bands are going to bring out or anything like that.
No, but it's going to be, it's a lot of my favorite bands right now. So I'm stoked.
That's great, man. How do you guys do, you guys do much stuff overseas? Cause we have a lot of listeners actually in Europe and Australia and stuff. So I wonder if you got any plans to go over there.
We do. We are going to end up back overseas at the end of this year. I've only been over once and we went over with Mayday Parade and the Maine and that was incredible. And like you feel like a rock star when you get to like Europe and UK, like it's incredible. I remember like when we stepped out of our bus in Milan, like we were just swarmed by people and it was so sick. So like, I'm excited to get back over there. I'm dying to go.
Yeah, no, I think it's great for you guys. First time on the show. I always like to talk to singers about kind of how they got to where they are. I know you've mentioned in the past that you're a terrible guitar player, good songwriter, pretty good singer, and not a great frontman. So I'm kind of curious how you all got started just with, you know, how like what your family structure was like growing up. Was music a part of your household? And then how you transitioned from listening to music to all of a sudden being like, yeah, I want to be a musician.
I don't know. Like, music wasn't a big thing in my family. Like, I remember, like, my two granddads always, like, wanted to play instruments. My dad was, like, a metalhead in the 80s. But, like, it wasn't big into my life. I think it was just, like, when I was hitting my teenage years and I was, like, the awkward, bigger kid. Like, I didn't have a lot of friends or anything. So, like, I found comfort in punk rock and, like, listening to the Misfits and the Ramones and shit like that. And it kind of like made me want to go and start playing in bands. And I originally started playing drums, but I picked up a guitar when I was about 18. I was like, I'm going to write a record. And that's what I did. And then eventually started this band.
That's crazy. 18 is like pretty late in life. You know what I mean? Like most people, they say, oh, I was like, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, you know, and I took guitar lessons. That's kind of like how it started. So obviously like you're 18, you know, you talk about already being into punk rock and stuff. Like, how did you get into punk rock? Like, were there, I know you're from Baltimore, Maryland area.
Yeah.
Were there like local shows that you find out like from going to high school? Did you have friends in high school that went to shows or how'd that work?
I mean, yeah. I mean, we had like a local church that everybody, like all the local bands would go play at. And then we also just had good bands at the time coming out of Baltimore. Like we had All Time Low, we had Dangerous Summer,
right.
Good Charlotte, like all these bands from right around where we lived were coming out. So it was easy for everybody to get excited and want to like be a part of that.
I mean, that era was what? How old are you now?
I'm 27.
27. Yeah. So you probably were growing up like in the time when, you know, that real, like, I don't know what you call it. You know, bands like the big bands probably when you were in high school were like Taking Back Sunday, Brand New.
Yeah. You.
That whole scene. Me.
Yeah.
And that whole thing, I definitely hear elements of that in your music, but I hear a lot of different elements too. It's funny you bring up Dangerous Summer because I didn't know they were from Maryland, actually. But they definitely hear a little bit of their band in your band.
Yeah, dude, I love those guys. I was hanging out with AJ, their singer, the other day. Fuck, yeah. Fantastic.
Fuck, I love that band too, man. It's a shame they never... Fuck, like, they should have been the biggest band in the world, man. Like, God, I love them. But, but yeah, talk to me about how you went from whatever you just said, Misfits, and I don't know what else you said, but from those punk rock bands to being like, all right, 18, I'm gonna write a record, and then all of a sudden, you know... It sounds like Weatherbox or something, you know, like a totally different influence that obviously is not punk rock.
Well, yeah, it was like when I was like 12 and 13 was when I started listening to like punk music. And then eventually, like, I remember kids coming into school and being like, yeah, I'm emo. Like, it was at that time when like South Park was making jokes about it and shit.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, right, right.
Like, then we like, I remember like starting to listen to bands like Coheed and Take Back Sunday and all of those like Brand New and shit. Like, that's what we dove into, and then I, like, started, like, in my late teens, started listening to, like, folk music, and then I wrote, like, this, like, folky acoustic record when I bought my first guitar, and then eventually just wanted to start a rock band. And, yeah, Weatherbox is a huge influence. I love that band.
Yeah, I love them, too. No, I heard you talk about them before, and I was like, oh, fuck, Weatherbox? Yeah, like, because that's another band. Like, they're such an amazing band. Not a lot of people really know about them. I'm sure people listen to this go, who, Weatherbox? Like, yes, go check out Weatherbox. Their first record.
But they're a band's band.
Like, I guess they're a band's band. But I mean,
they really are. And like, anyone I've talked to has said, like, Brian Warren, their lead singer, is one of the most incredible songwriters, like, that you'll ever hear. And it's true. Like, they're great. They're fantastic.
100%. All the Brians, man. All the Brians are good songwriters.
Yeah, oh,
Brian,
yeah.
Brian McTernan.
Oh, yeah.
You... there's lots of Brians, man.
Yeah, dude. McTernan, too, man. He's an incredible songwriter.
You did a record with McTernan, right?
Yeah, he co-produced this newest record with him.
Oh, he co-produced the record. Yeah, okay, cool. So, because I know he's a Maryland guy.
Yep.
And our flop record, which was Arrivals and Departures, he actually begged us to make the record.
He called
me, yeah, because we'd met before, and I mean, huge fans of McTernan. Like, for me, the stuff he did, like my favorite stuff he did was Strike Anywhere.
Oh yeah,
one of my favorite bands, and like those records sound incredible, and like our bass player is one of the biggest Hot Water Music fans ever, and I think McTernan had done all of their records. And then one of our bands, local bands from the Toronto area that were our good friends were Monin, and he did a Monin record too.
Red Tree.
Right, Red Tree. So he called and was like, I have to make this record. I have to do this. Like, I need to make your record. And we fucking went with Mark Trombino, and that was a huge mistake.
That's crazy, too. Yeah, McTernan's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. Like, can't sing or play guitar worth a shit. But can write a better song than anyone you'll ever meet.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, a producer we worked with, Cameron Webb, he's the same way. Like, I guess he's a bass player. Like, he's, you know, I've seen him, like, try to play guitar, and it's kind of funny. And I try to hear him, like, hit a note, like, show me what a harmony is, and he can't hit the notes. But then, yeah, like, that guy putting together a song or coming up with a sound or an idea, it's amazing how producers can be so different, you know, and be successful. Just in such different ways.
Yeah, it was really incredible. I mean, McTernan took time out of his schedule, didn't get paid to come in and do this record. He like pretty much he's done recording and producing, so he just came in as like a favor, and like we're friends, so it ended up working out.
That's terrific. You talk about Weatherbox being a band's band.
Yeah.
Do you feel like up to this point, Have Mercy has kind of been a band's band?
Yeah, I could definitely see it. I mean, like, I don't know if it's, like, I don't think we have the music that's a band's band like, music, but I think we just have that attitude that, like, every band gets along with us for the most part.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if we have that respect that Weatherbox or, like, a band like Mansions or something like that gets, but...
Yeah, no.
I think you could be.
I think you do. I think you do. to be honest, but I think like there is a sort of struggle like with that, right? Like, I'm sure all the popular bands, like somebody like Real Friends, who I would say is not a band's band, really. They're well liked and they're great people. I had Dan on the show. Great guy.
Love him.
Fucking love him. But kids love that band. Kids come out in droves to see that band. And I'm sure a part of them are like, oh, I wish we were like, you know, more cool and respected. But then a band like Weatherbox or Mansions or whatever are probably like, we don't care about fucking if these bands like us. Like, we don't care about being cool. We want people at our fucking shows. We want people buying our records, you know? So it's kind of like you can't win.
I think that's kind of the mold. Well, yeah, that's kind of the mold we're trying to break right now. Like,
yeah,
I think we
exactly.
write great fucking
to,
songs.
That's what I was trying to get you to say. So,
I think we write great fucking songs. And I think that I've talked about this before. I think we get billed on packages where kids don't really know what to do with us. Like, our headliners always fucking kill it because we bring out bands that sound like us. But, you know, on tours with Real Friends, stuff like that, half of the crowd are like 14-year-olds who don't really connect with this. I don't think we fit the mold that they want to listen to. So it's a struggle, but we're in it.
You got to do it. You got to do it. So I noticed, well, we were on Warped Tour together in 2015. It was great hanging out with you guys. I know you enjoyed our Canada Day party.
Hell yeah, man. That was a blast.
I didn't know we had you guys and Seaway at the same place, man. I'm surprised there wasn't a fist fight over this hopeless thing.
Oh, man.
I'm kidding.
Dude,
I keep bringing it up. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we just wandered over drunk and saw a Canadian flag, and we're like, all right, let's go there.
Perfect. Yes. No, we're very Canadians, you know, we're very welcoming. I also thought having a Canada Day party in Nashville was kind of funny for some reason.
That's pretty good.
It's like the most not Canadian place. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, that's America's heart, man.
That's right. That's right. But I noticed, you know, Warped Tour, typically, you know, the Warped Tour bands, they tend to do it every 2 years. How was your experience on 2015? Is there a reason that you are not doing it this year?
We had an offer for last year and we turned it down. I don't want to be a Warped Tour band. One, I am not down with the heat and being outside every day.
Yeah.
But like, also, I don't think we want to be in that realm of things. It was a good experience and it's the hardest fucking tour I think you'll ever do. Yeah. So it's good to do it. But other than that, like, I want to be playing in clubs. I want to make things intimate and I don't want to have other bands playing around me. I want people to like hear what we have to say in our music. So
no, I can respect that. But I mean, do you think playing in 2015, do you think you guys got a lot out of it? Did you pick up a lot of fans? I'm sure you would have noticed. Or were you out there in the heat being like, just get me out of here?
No, I'm not going to say we were like that. Like, we definitely, we had a great fucking time. But no, I don't think it really furthered our career at all. I don't think a lot of the fans that came out to watch us said that they came just to see us and then we're leaving. And like, right. That was it. Yeah. So when we got the offer for the next year, we're like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be worth it. And it's not even like we lost money or it wasn't like a financial thing. It's just not for us. I don't think it is for every band.
No, I kind of agree with you too. And like, stylistically, your music, I think it's tough when you're playing with, you know, bands that are kind of like, you know, aggressive, like heavy. They've got screaming or they've got breakdowns or, you know, like, you guys are kind of more of a, I think you guys, your music is more suited to a club. Or a different sort of festival than Warped Tour. So it does make sense. Musically, like, what would you got? Like, if you had to say to somebody what you would call your band, what do you say at this point? Like, do you just say we're a rock band? Like, I mean, I pretty much just say we're a rock band when I talk about my band, so I don't even know. So I'm kind of curious, though, because your band checks some boxes, not all the boxes, but it's really hard to pigeonhole you guys into a genre. So I'm kind of just wondering where you're at with that.
It depends on who we're talking to and the age of the person who asks. But like,
true.
I'll say like alternative rock for the most part. Like, I don't think we're an indie band. We're not cool enough to be an indie band.
Right.
I think if like there was a cooler bar rock scene, that's probably what Have Mercy would be. But I don't really know. Like, I just consider it rock and roll. And I guess I've been notorious for talking about that lately, that I don't want to be pigeonholed and just want to be a rock band. And I think if people start looking at this genre of music and this scene as just rock instead of pigeonholing to emo or pop punk, then we can actually build it into more mainstream. So that's what I'm hoping that we do.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. And, like, you know, emo is a funny term, which I know you guys get tossed into it. And, like, people are calling, like, Moose Blood an emo band. Or, you know, there's, like, some bands that are kind of aligned in your sort of genre in a way. And it's really funny. Like, you say, oh, the first time I heard emo was, like, My Chemical Romance and, like, that era or Brand New Taking Back Sunday. The first time I heard the term emo, they were talking about, like, Page 99 and Orchid. And, like, you know, and, like those bands. And, like, then everyone would talk about Rites of Spring and, you know, Fugazi a little bit. You know, and like, so when people started calling my band an emo band, I was like, what? We're not really an emo band, you know?
No.
So it's really hard with these genres when people want to throw it around and say, oh, yeah, like, the one that always bothered me was when people said Saves the Day was an emo band. I'm like, no, Saves the Day is a punk band.
Fuck yeah, they are.
And maybe they're a pop punk band, but they're not an emo band. So these genre things, you're right, that they do, it does kind of piss me off.
Yeah, it's got to piss you off a little bit. But, like, at the same time, there's nothing really you can do. Like, majority rules in that sense. Like, I can't tell you I'm a fucking rock band, and then 100 people are like, you're not a rock band, you're an emo band. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm wrong.
I know.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
But the problem is saying you're a rock band is almost like saying nothing.
Yeah, I get that.
Because there's like, of course you're a rock band. We're all rock bands. Do you know what I mean? There's like, it's like just at the big, you know, the big tree that you have, you know, we have all these different genres and they're all pointing at different things. You know what I'm talking about? Like whatever that kind of diagram is called. At the top is rock music and everything is rock music. You could say Metallica is a rock band. You know,
right.
You could say Arcade Fire is a rock band. Does Arcade Fire and Metallica sound alike? Do they have any, you know, are they similar at all? No. You could both say they're rock bands. So I think that's the problem. It's a bit of an eye roll when you're like, oh, well, we're just a rock band. It's like, okay, well, yeah, we're just say you're a band then. You might as well. You're not an electronic band. You're not a dance band. You're not hip hop. So you're a rock band.
But I feel like if you get pigeonholed as an emo band, like it's kind of a negative term in some sense, especially to like an older demographic. Like it's, you know.
Well, you know, I agree with you and then I don't agree with you because then there's like, the website, I think it's like isthisemo.com or something. Like, there's that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know if anybody else listening
to this knows, but there's some website where you can, it's like,
is this band emo?
Yeah, or whatever. And you put it in and it goes, yes, they're emo, or no, they're not emo. And that to me is not, that's actually like, if they're an emo band, it's like cool. It's almost like, is this band cool or not? You know? More so than is this band emo or not. So I almost think that the emo genre at this point is cool. Like it's actually cool to be emo now, whereas 10 years ago, it was really not cool at all. Because emo at that point was like, had this mainstream connotation with like My Chemical Romance, you know, being the obvious one. And a lot of people looking at that and kind of rolling their eyes because so much of it was like theatrical and over the top.
It was amazing.
Well, that's you're a little bit younger than me. Like you're almost 10 years younger than me. So for you, that was amazing. For me, I wasn't really into it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Even as I get older, I'm like, wow, that was incredible. Like you made it into such a huge deal. And like the fact that they got called an emo band, helped their band. I don't know if it's necessarily helping us. So,
yeah. Well, they were like, it was like a part of a movement though. You know, kids were like, well, what are you? Oh, I'm an emo. Like, that didn't exist when I was in high school. Like, I knew what emo was. Like, The Promise Ring was another band that was an emo band, or Mineral. Those bands.
Jealous Sound.
Jealous. Actually, you know what? It's funny you bring up the Jealous Sound. When I started listening to your record, like, the first song, I was like, this sounds like Knapsack or Jealous Sound. It really, I think, like, the first song of your first record, I was, like, really getting that vibe. Is that a big influence of you guys?
Not really, but we played our first tour was with the Jell Sound, and like we played Knapsack reunion shows, and like
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like Blair Sheehan is like one of the craziest songwriters I've ever met. He's incredible. I don't know if it's a huge influence, but like I can listen to those records and always be satisfied.
Yeah, no, that's, wow, that's crazy. Yeah, I know, I've loved Knapsack since I was in high school. I've never seen them play. I've missed all the reunion shows and everything. I saw the Jealous Sound only once, but that's crazy. And don't they have some new band now I heard about?
Yeah, I forget what it's called, but I saw it like a couple weeks ago that they announced they're doing something else, so I can't wait to hear what that
ends
up being.
Yeah, yeah, no, there's something going on. I really should know at least the name of the band, but I don't, and whatever. Hey, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry, guys, I'm not that in tune with all things emo at this point. Well, we've been talking about this for a long time. Let's talk a little bit about your voice. Being a singer of a band on tour, how does it hold up? Is it, for the most part, pretty good? Do you have problems with it?
No, I don't normally have too many problems as long as I stay in my range. Like, I guest sang on the band Broadside that we're on tour with. I guest sang on their set the other night, and that dude's voice is way higher, and I blew my voice instant. So, as long as I stay in my comfort zone, I'm fine. And I don't smoke cigarettes or do anything crazy, so I keep it healthy.
That's good. No, I just always wonder because do you do a lot of warming up?
No, I never do. And every time I do it, I feel like I sing worse.
That's funny. Dallas Green told me that once, actually. He said he just said he never warms up, and the one time he did warm up, he lost his voice. So he doesn't warm up. I mean, this is like 15 years ago he told me this, but it is funny, and I'm a bit of a very minimalistic warmer upper. I just kind of warm up to make sure I can kind of sing. That's kind of what I do.
I mean, I'll like yell before we go on stage or something like that, but I don't sit and do the oohs and the ahs. I'm not about that.
Well, cool. And do you guys use in your monitors or anything like that?
No, I want to. Like, I want to start using them. It's expensive. It's a big setup for everybody to get. So,
You're right. That's totally. I mean, you're talking about you have to get the split snake and you got to get the extra mixer and then the in ear. Like the Sennheiser or Shure, like receivers and everything, all that shit. Yeah, it's like, God, it's got to be to get a whole band outfitted with that. It's got to be like $10,000.
Yeah, it's about that, especially if you're getting everybody custom molded. And now, right, we used to be a 4-piece, and now we're a 5-piece, and it's like, fuck, this is just gonna get really expensive. But I think we're gonna end up making that change. It's kind of better for everyone.
Was there ever a point when you thought about taking the guitar off and trying to run around and be a front man, or was that never on the table?
No, I can't work a mic stand at all, and I can't work a crowd. Like, that's one gift that I do not have. I like respect anyone who can sit up there and like be that entertaining without a guitar, but I can't do it.
So the guitar helps you work a crowd? How do you mean?
I don't know. It's just, I think it's more comfortable for me to have it on me and play. And plus, like, I really enjoy playing guitar and singing. Like, that's how I started writing these songs, so that's how I want to perform them.
Definitely, yeah. Man.
I don't know how you do it. They're incredible. That's incredible.
Well, for me, I mean, I was a guitar player. I started out as a guitar player. I had no interest in singing whatsoever. The only reason I started singing was I was the only guy of my friends, you know, I'm talking about like when I'm like 12 or 13 years old, I was the only guy that could carry a tune. And then I don't know how I found myself in a band not playing guitar, but yeah, I mean, it's funny because now I've gone back and I just did, like I was mentioning to you earlier, that I was in Los Angeles doing some solo stuff, and it's like funny now, like I play guitar and sing and I'm like, man, this is so much harder than just singing. Cause I have a whole nother thing to think about, and I gotta like look down and sometimes and make sure my hand's on the right fret, you know, like not like just playing, just singing and not playing guitar is like way easier, like, you know.
Yeah, that's what everyone says.
But I think, but it is funny. Like, I remember the first show I ever played with Silverstein was the first time I'd ever played a show without a guitar, and I like was like, what do I do with my hands? Like, I can run around. This is so weird. And it's like, in some ways it is harder because you have like a different element that is not musical.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's no lessons. Like, you can take guitar lessons, you can take singing lessons. I don't think you can take frontman lessons.
Hell no. Like, and there's sometimes that I'll watch a band and like the frontman's just way too corny. And like when I like first started like thinking about doing Have Mercy, I like factored that in. I was like, I don't want to be that dude who's like working with his hands too much with the crowd and like, I don't know. There's a balance that you have to hit, or else you either look ridiculous or amazing. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. You never take off the guitar and, like, stage dive or anything?
No. The other day I did. I dropped the guitar and went into the crowd with the mic, which definitely felt awkward, but...
Was that a calculated thing? Like, or did you just were fucking feeling it and just were like, fuck it, I'm going?
Oh, yeah, dude, no. The fucking crowd, in we were in Denver, and they were killing it. And I was like, I got to do something more. I jumped off stage, slipped my hand wide open. I was like, I think I was, like, bleeding into the crowd, but I don't know. And I was just, like, singing and throwing the mic, and it was a blast. But it still felt weird. Felt weird.
Yeah, that's, but I mean, I don't know, man. That's like, maybe that's a thing. Like, maybe that's something that, if you felt that in that moment, I mean, who's to say that the crowd isn't feeling that every show? You know what I mean? Like, obviously there's a bit of a vibe between a crowd and a band. You know, like the most cliche thing ever is like when a band's like, oh yeah, yeah, like how's the show? And it's like, oh yeah, well, we were just like feeding off their energy. You know, man, the crowd, you know, we were feeding off the crowd's energy and then they were feeding off our energy, you know, but it's like, it's cliche, but it's like pretty true. And
yeah,
some of the greatest moments I've had, you know, as a musician on stage or whatever, have been just like random. Like one time I was actually pretty drunk, but really feeling the crowd in Detroit. And I like stacked up a bunch of rock boxes and whatever, and I just did this like crazy jump off of these things into the crowd, like totally unscripted, you know, but it was like a moment I'll never forget, you know. And I'm sure that the other night in Denver, you doing that, you know, and it's like a part of it, you don't want to force it and you don't want it to become fake, but you want to put on a great show for the people that came.
Yeah, I think there's a, like, we played floor shows for so long too that I was just always used to people being in my shit and like they would rock out with me. I think I'm still getting comfortable playing on bigger stages in front of 1,000 people, 2,000 people, like, and learning to work that. So it's definitely something that I'll have to grow with.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, dude, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I'm trying to think what else I can ask you about. So the new record is out now. What's it called for the people to check it out?
Make the best of it. Make the best of it.
Make the best of it. Is there a significance to that title? Obviously, I know it's, you know, I know that's a theme that kind of goes throughout the record. If I'm right.
Yeah.
Is there a theme that goes through the record that kind of works with that title? Talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it was. There's actually a track that wasn't on the record that has that line in it, and
so it got, like, cut the song with that.
Yeah,
I love when that happens. I think that's so funny.
It's a B-side. It'll probably come out later, but like as that record process was going on, and what, a month and a half turned into almost 8 months, I got kicked out of my house that I was living at with my girlfriend. Like, my granddad died. We thought the record was never going to come out. I didn't like really have a band anymore. Like, so much was happening. And like towards the end of it, as like these songs were finalized and we were getting the artwork together and everything, like, I just pulled that line from the song and thought that was perfect. Like, you know, especially like what, after not being happy with our last record, like, I just wanted people to listen to this and accept it for what it is and make the best of it and find, like, there's something for everyone on this record. And I definitely think it's all relatable.
Well, that's great. I mean, it sounds like a very personal record and a personal line. Also sort of, you know, obviously you went through some very negative things, but you're able to pull some positivity and hope out of it. And is that something that's important for you to convey to your fans? That, hey, like, yes, I'm singing about some negative situations and bad things, but at the end of the day, I want to have an element of hope in my music?
Yeah, definitely. And I think kids get that when they come to the show, too. Like, I'm not on stage, like crying or acting like a sad boy. Like, I'm up there, like, you get to hear these songs that came from a terrible moment in my life, but I can be up there fucking smiling and like enjoying myself, because like, this is, you know, it's the coolest life that anyone can live. So like, I don't know, at the end of the day, like, everything gets better and life moves on. Like, I hope that people get that.
Totally, man. No, I totally can relate to that too. And I think it's a great record. Everybody should check it out. And yeah, man, I think sky's the limit for you guys, and it's great to see. You got the new lineup. I'm sure everybody's excited. You're on a great tour. So what's coming up later on in the year? No Warped Tour, obviously. You got some plans to go overseas, and what else is gonna happen?
Well, we're gonna end up doing. I don't know when this is coming out, but fuck it, we're doing.
It's gonna come out
run.
Real soon, like in a week and a half.
Sick. Yeah, we're doing an acoustic run, kind of something intimate for fans. I'm just doing with a buddy of mine. Yeah. So we're gonna do that, and then we have the fall tour. We go to Europe, and then I'm sure we're gonna start booking for next year and like stay on the road, keep pushing this record. Like, I know we all firmly believe in this record, and I'd like to do a few more, and it's going well, so we'll see.
So how's the acoustic thing work? So it's you and another guy, like two guitars, vocals, and just an intimate show?
Yeah, we're just going to do two guitars, vocals, and I think I'm going to translate some songs to keys and play on that a little bit. And I'm grabbing another friend of mine who plays, he's an acoustic artist, and we're just going to hit the road, hop in the car.
That's great.
All right. Yeah, it's going to be cool. And like, I've had a lot of fans come out, and like, I play acoustic a lot of the time after the shows for people, and they always seem to really enjoy it. So I thought, why not actually just go on the road and do it?
You ever had any thoughts of starting like another project? Cause I know obviously like Have Mercy is you. So maybe it's redundant. But I wonder, you know, like this is almost like a different kind of thing. Do you have other songs that are more acoustic based that you can add to Have Mercy's sort of repertoire, or is there like a plan of maybe having another project?
Yeah, there's definitely a plan of doing another project soon. Like we had, when we went in to do Make the Best of It, we scrapped 10 or 11 songs because they didn't really translate well to full band, and they were really, really good acoustic songs, but didn't work well for Have Mercy. So I think that if someone wants to put out that record, then that's going to happen soon.
Like an acoustic record, either Have Mercy or Brian Swindle or whatever.
Yeah, definitely not Have Mercy. Something else. It's a little Bonavir-esque. So we'll see, see how it translates. But I'm hoping to hit the studio this summer a little bit and start recording those.
That sounds amazing. Well, that's great news for fans of yours. So, more music. The record just came out. There's more songs that are like written in the same sessions, so they're probably awesome.
Yeah, man. There's so much. I don't want to stop. Like, I feel like it sounds corny, but like a fire up my ass. Like, I'm ready to fucking go, man.
Do you write on the road?
I don't. Like, I'm way too distracted on the road at all times.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's why I ask. But you just seem like you have so much material. So I would wonder if it just happens when you're at home.
Yeah, it's mainly like when I'm just sitting in my house or sitting in the studio that I can pump things out, but never on the road. There's too many people. The environment's not comfortable.
Yeah, I feel that, man. I feel that. Well, hey, dude, thanks again for taking the time to chat with me before your show in fantastic Houston, Texas.
Yeah, man.
Is it getting better? What part of the city is this venue in? Is it downtown?
No, it's like on the outskirts. Like I'm looking at skyscrapers right now, but they're miles and miles away. So it's a little bit on the outskirts, but this is sweet. They have an outdoor venue, and then the inside is huge. And like I said, nice green room. So it should be a good time.
All right, man. Well, hey, I hope you have a great show tonight with Real Friends. And
thanks, man.
Yeah, I'll see you around. Won't be Warped Tour, but I'll see you somewhere.
Yeah, man, I did want to say, great new track, by the way.
Oh, yeah, Retrograde, that's right. That's out now. Thanks for checking it out, man. That's right. Yeah, it's funny, actually, before I let you go, I think we were talking about your song, what is the song, Good Christian Man?
Yeah.
That you were saying that Hopeless really wanted you guys to put out as a single. And you didn't like it. It's funny. That's kind of, to be completely honest, that's how we felt about this song, Retrograde.
Really? It's a banger.
Thank you. I mean, I like the song. I wrote, it was one of the ones that I had written, but we had like our list of the songs we wanted to like put out as singles, in our heads, but we didn't want to tell the label. So we're like, okay, we'll send Rise Records the record, and then they'll come back and they're like, this is the song. And we're like, really? That one? We were so surprised. So it's funny, but people seem to be digging the track, and And I'm glad that that you're digging it too, man. Thanks for checking it out.
Dude, yeah. The video was sick. The ink blot shit was all cool in the water. That was rad. It's a good time.
There you go, yeah. Yeah. Very flashy. If you have epilepsy, don't check out the video. But but thanks, man. Have a great rest of the tour. And loving the record. And really excited for this acoustic stuff, too, whenever that comes out. So,
cool, man. Hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Yeah, Brian. All the best, man.
All right. See you, bro.
Yeah, cheers.
So there it is with Brian. That's right. There is a new Silverstein record coming. For some reason, I always forget to talk about it in the intro, but it is available for pre-order right now. Head over to silversteinmusic.com. You can find all the links, regardless of where you live in the world. And we have a new song out, too. It's called Retrograde. You know what? This is my show. I'm going to play my own song. But first, of course, here is a new single, one of the new songs from the new Have Mercy record, which you have to check out. Here it is, Coexist on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
You smoking cigarettes in the back of your house. I watch the liquor spill and drip from your mouth. You said you're holding on to old memories. Keep you from moving on to all of your dreams. But it wasn't the best and it wasn't the worst. And when I feel you again, I wanna know if it hurts to tell you the truth.
Cause it wasn't the best and it wasn't the worst. When I feel you again.